We are Vineyard.
Somos Viña.
We are Vineyard.
It's almost like, and you know, in the 12 steps, like I need to keep showing up. It doesn't matter if I've been sober for 30 years or for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I need to just make a meeting. And in the same way with emotional healthy discipleship, I realize like my habits are so malformed around what happens with my difficult emotions. My habits are so malformed with the way that I relate to other people that unless I'm continually, unless it's like at the forefront of my mind and heart routinely, I know how easily lost I could get.
Mm-hmm.
So even my role as a president of EHD and working with the school and all this stuff, like I'm like, guys, you realize like I feel like I get just as much as I give.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm continually being reminded of my grief and loss.
Yeah.
Of are there areas that I need to, you know, the journeying through the wall of embracing kind of what God might be doing at the wall. Are there areas in which my false self is showing up at church? Are there areas in which like my false self is showing up in our elder board meetings?
Yeah.
Like when I'm in the courses, I'm constantly being reminded of all these very meaningful topics that end up being very transformational for me.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the We Are Vineyard podcast, conversations to help us grow with Jesus and each other. This season, we have a number of incredible guests lined up for you. And we're excited to let you know that this season's episodes will also be available as videos. So subscribe on YouTube so you never miss an episode. On today's episode, we'll hear part two of Jay's talk with Drew Hyun, pastor and founder of Hope Church NYC and the president of Emotionally Healthy Discipleship. Let's listen in.
Okay, so if I'm random leader, pastor type, I'm like, wow, this all sounds really interesting. Do I just basically go buy a book and what, like talk about it with my staff? Like what do I do? If I'm like, this is so compelling, like,
yeah,
tell me what to do. What do I do?
I would recommend for sure. There's the books to read. But like we, for specifically for pastors and leaders, we have what's called the School of Emotionally Healthy Leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an, it's part one, which is 8 weeks in the fall. And then part one is 8 weeks in the spring. And then part two is 8 weeks in the fall.
Okay.
And it's curated for pastors and leaders.
Mm-hmm.
You're part of a smaller cohort, but you also have larger group leadership, talks, examples, testimonies. It's a pretty big investment because each semester is about 30 hours of time and energy and reading and practicing. But it's a deep dive in one's own emotionally healthy leadership. And so most pastors and leaders, I almost immediately tell them, I think you should think about doing the School of Emotional Healthy Leadership.
Right. You just sign up.
Sign up. You can register. Right. There's a cost. I don't know what the cost is right now, but I should probably know that. But it's, and then you're put into a cohort with people either in a similar stage or in a similar role at a particular church.
All Zoom. Okay.
And then it also requires each semester you have a cohort leader.
Right.
And that cohort leader will lead you also through a customized journey with either your Jenneagram or your grief and loss chart. And the group itself, some groups have really coalesced and become really good friends that have continued to meet afterwards.
Right.
But that school is usually a great place to start. I know that Vineyard pastors, John and Arletta Arelli, they're part of, they help lead a table.
Yep.
So they're cohort leaders. Various Vineyard pastors have been through it as well. And hey, I'm a Vineyard pastor now too.
That's right.
Well, I don't know. I haven't been ordained yet, I guess.
Oh, but, yeah. Well,
that whole process.
In training. No.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's, and then, but that I think is one of the best experiences. Now, what's been interesting is people have asked me because I lead the course. Right. So here's what, every time we do the course at church, I'm usually leading the course and leading a small group of our leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very next day, I'm doing the School of Emotional Healthy Leadership with other leaders.
Right.
And people have often said to me, they're like, don't you get sick of this?
Right.
Because you're now, like, when the course at our church is going and the school is going.
Yep.
I mean, that's a solid 6 hours just of online with people time.
Yeah.
And I usually tell them, and then I'll do the same in the fall. Mm. I say, that's how emotionally unhealthy I am. I'll say,
it helps me. Yeah,
it
right.
It helps me. Like, if I'm not current with this, I know it's almost like, and you know, in the 12 steps, like I need to keep showing up. It doesn't matter if I've been sober for 30 years or for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I need to just make a meeting. And in the same way with emotional healthy discipleship, I realize like my habits are so malformed around what happens with my difficult emotions. My habits are so malformed with the way that I relate to other people that unless I'm continually, unless it's like at the forefront of my mind and heart routinely, I know how easily lost I could get.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I say, so even my role as a president of EHD and working with the school and all this stuff, like I'm like, guys, do you realize like I feel like I get just as much as I give because I'm continually being reminded of my grief and loss of, are there areas that I need to, you know, the journeying through the wall of embracing kind of what God might be doing at the wall. Are there areas in which my false self is showing up at church? Are there areas in which like my false self is showing up in our elder board meetings.
Yeah.
Like when I'm in the courses, I'm constantly being reminded of all these very meaningful topics that end up being very transformational for me.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Okay. So what do you think is the main hurdle between here and there? I'm sure you have people that are interested.
Yeah.
And then they don't follow through.
Yeah.
What are you seeing that helps people? I mean, I know the main thing that tends to happen is you have to have a crisis.
Yes.
But outside of that, outside of like, I mean, I don't know if I've ever told you a story. You would like this story. You know, I was doing stuff with Jim Harrington. You know, he's becoming a friend, Leader's Journey, all the stuff they do.
Love Jim's stuff.
Faith walking, And I'd done kind of their intensive and I was like, this was great. It was like really helpful. And so I'm on with Jim because, you know, we had a friendship. I was like, Jim, like this next thing is like 6 months. It's like every week. It's like a lot of stuff. And there's like, I mean, I got a lot I'm doing.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, man, like I've got to know you. You're doing great. Like you don't want to do it. Don't do it. It's fine. Like I was like, oh, well, I'm a little surprised. I kind of thought you would want me to do it. Like he's like, well, I mean, I think it'd be great, but you don't have to do anything you want to do. I mean, it's your call. I was like, well, but what about, I mean, I don't know. I kind of was hoping you would try to convince me. And he was like, no, it doesn't generally work well that way.
Yeah.
But so yeah, whatever, man. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. And how's the rest of the stuff? And I said, no, well, pretend like you were. And he was like, okay, well, if I was, here's what I would say. We can do work now. Mm-hmm. If you want to. And we can start to uncover what's going on underneath that you might not be present to.
Mm.
Or it's right around 50, you know, because at the time I'm in this conversation, I must be in my mid-30s with him.
Yeah.
So right around 50, you don't know this, but your energy is going to start to drop.
Mm.
And there's a percentage of your energy that you're not conscious of that you're using to manage stuff that you're not aware of.
Yes.
Now, the problem is you don't know what percentage that is.
Yeah.
It might be 30%. It might be 50. It might be 5.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Yep.
He goes, have you ever wondered why guys are having affairs that are 50, 60, and 70?
Mm.
And I was like, you know, it's not the kind of thing you should ask at a party, but I have wondered. Like, I thought somewhere your sex drive would go down. You know, like, you're not going to, you don't even want to do that.
Yeah.
He said, what's going on is their energy is going down. So they were using, let's say they have 20 widgets of energy.
Yes.
And seven of them were managing some insecurity, some false drive thing.
Yes.
Well, you have 20, you still have 13 units of energy to deal with the rest of your life. Well, now all of a sudden they have 10.
Yeah.
And they're older and towards the end of the year. So now they're using 70% of their energy to not do something dumb. And they only have 3 units of energy to do the rest of their life.
Mm.
They're going to wear out.
Yeah.
And that's why it's not about sex drive.
Yes.
It's about a weakening of your capacity.
Yes.
And you end up doing something dumb.
Wow.
He says, so here's the deal, Jay. Maybe you're great. And you want to call me when you're 55. You know, like
you
remember this conversation?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're like, oh no, I do need help. He goes, or we could kick the tires now. We could start like uncovering, seeing what's under there. Worst cases, 6 months from now, you'll be like, this was such a waste of time.
Yeah.
I was so much healthier than I thought I was or whatever.
Yeah.
He goes, but I think it's worth investing in your life. Because 100%. Jay, you want the energy for your kids. You want the energy for your wife. You want, you don't want to manage stuff.
Yeah.
Even if you're good at it.
Yes.
He's like, the worst news of high-level leaders, this is the number one thing I've learned even the last 10 years. The worst news of high-level leaders is you have a lot of capacity. The reason most leaders are high-level leaders is they can manage a lot of stuff at once. Someday, somewhere, somehow, that's going to drop.
Yes.
What happens then?
Yes.
And if you've not built patterns and ways of behaving that enable you to get the help you need, to notice them as they're coming, it usually means the bottom falls out. And that's when you get help.
Yeah.
And he's like, so there you go. There's my shtick. And I was like, I'll sign up
right now.
I am in, like right now, like I am in. It was so persuasive. And so I've used language like that with pastors and leaders. The fact you can do it doesn't mean you should be able to do it the way you are.
Yeah.
That's not a good metric.
Right.
Should we wait for you to burn out? Should we wait for a panic attack? Should we wait for that first time you're like, man, I got a little heat out of that sexual conversation.
Yeah.
What's going on? Maybe we shouldn't just wait for something bad to happen. Mm-hmm. So that would be my hunch. Some of it's just we think we're busy. But what do you think are the hurdles? How are you helping people get connected to this work?
Yeah, I mean, I was sharing earlier that that's been my experience with emotionally healthy discipleship is most people will tell me, oh yeah, I read that 10 years ago. Then I crashed. Then I was like, oh snap, this was onto something.
Yes.
And something that really I remember my therapist in my 20s, as I'm going through my own, it was the first kind of unlocking, because here I was a new life, unlocking this new paradigm for ministry and life, new paradigm for life.
Yeah.
And my therapist said to me, he said, you know, he said, what I've found to be true is that the only spiritual lesson someone can learn after the age of 21 comes through suffering and failure.
Oh, gosh.
And I was like, Ron, the only
spiritual
lesson? He goes, I think the only spiritual lessons you can learn come through suffering and failure.
Wow.
And he shared, he said, success, even ministry success and fruitfulness, all it teaches you is maybe how to be more self-reliant.
Yeah.
How to think that somehow you were in control.
Yeah.
And he said, but truly the only things that, it's kind of like the talk that you gave at our church about the wilderness, man.
Yeah.
And
there's stuff you learn in the wilderness, you cannot learn in the river.
Yes. And I think there's a part of me. And so in some ways, like it only is like a wilderness or failure and suffering that can spur people on to the deeper journey.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember kind of the fear of God being in when I heard that.
Yeah.
And sure enough, as I look back now, here I am in my mid, he said that to me when I was in my early 20s.
Wow.
And here I am in my mid 40s now. And I'm like, you know, when Pete and I went through that conflict and I left New Life and I was unemployed, that was like God met me in such a significant way.
Yeah.
When, you know, my wife had a miscarriage and our home got broken into violently and all this stuff, I was like, you know, that's when God met us in a profound way.
Yeah.
And so as I look back at my life, I can almost track like, yeah, those have been the moments. Now, with that said, if you were to ask me today, so do you want more? I'm like, no. Heck no. But yeah. It's what has kept me hungry enough to say, like, kind of like, you know, Jesus's thing, right? Like when he's like, if you think you've found your life, you've lost it.
Yep.
It's only when you've lost your life that you found it.
Yeah. Amen.
And I think for me, I'm like, I need to continually be at a place where God, I've lost my life and I want to keep losing my life so that I can keep finding it.
Amen.
And in many ways, my encouragement to any pastor or leader is like, gosh, that keeping a humble, tender hearted posture of a hunger for God, a humility of, it's interesting. Cause I think as a 20-year-old, I would look at my 40-year-old self and be like, oh my gosh, like I can't, how could I do that for the rest of my life?
You totally. Know?
But like now I'm like, oh, I just kind of like when Merton talks about the being a beginner of prayer.
Yep.
Like, I think I constantly just want to be a beginner and hopefully I can avoid the failure and suffering, the wilderness, but
Lord, please.
I know that God uses those things and I want to hopefully have an expansive heart, an open, humble heart.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I love about the Vineyard is there's such a dependence. Mm-hmm. And that dependence is only born from a certain kind of humility, you know?
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, under your leadership, or at least what I've heard from you several times is just, what would it look like for all of us as leaders from you and Danielle has been, you know, that same hunger for the presence of God in a manifest way, like having that same hunger to infiltrate every area of our lives, our physical health, our financial well-being,
yeah.
our emotional health. And so that's where I'm like, I want to frame a life that hopefully can be in this for the long run, you know?
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. I mean, the suffering. By the way, did you listen to that talk? You weren't even in the room.
I did, bro. I told you. Remember you walked in, we were watching the game, and I was like, hey, I just listened to your talk.
You were so ridiculous.
I loved it. No, I love listening to – it was a great talk. I mean, it was so profoundly true.
Oh, well, that's kind of you. Yeah, I'm like, wait a minute. How did you – anyway. But, I mean, I think what I believe to be true about the work that we do, which I don't know that we talk about enough, is how much of the work we do is disorientation and then reorientation.
Yes.
Like, you don't stack truth on top of truth. Or maybe you can for a period of time. But then God, because he loves us and he doesn't want us to just sort of become robots, there's pieces of what we stack that we stacked maybe in the wrong order or that thing has to get removed in order to show you another thing. And so, I mean, and by the way, sociologists, educators, this isn't a Christian principle, say that real transformation happens from disorientation to reorientation.
Yes.
That you might have all the right facts, but you have them in the wrong order. Mm-hmm. You have one bad fact that's canceling out three others. And it seems to me that growth is disorienting and reorienting. Okay. Well, that happens passively. Suffering does that. The leader you love has a moral failure and you go, wait a minute, what did they say that was real or a betrayal? Challenges. Okay. So I had all these things that were attached to this person.
Yeah.
Is any of that true? Was I tricked somehow? Am I naive? Am I in danger in the world in a way I didn't know? All that stuff. That can make you cynical or bitter, or it makes you throw away things you should keep.
Yeah.
Like deconstructing. It's so amazing when I listen to how many people are deconstructing. They're like, well, let me tell you the 10 things that are stupid.
Yeah.
I agree with like all 10, every time. I'm like, for sure. That is awful. Everything you just said is awful.
Yes.
And
yes,
it has nothing to do with the God that I know.
Yeah.
Or the way the church could and should be.
Yeah.
Or one of those things, if you just turn it a little sideways, you have a little grace. Like, yeah, people are messed up. But guess what? So are people outside the church.
Yeah.
So, you know, so anyway, that disorientation is always bad as long as you get reoriented. And that can happen to you, but you can also participate in that.
Yes.
So things like emotionally healthy
discipleship
for me helps you to rightly be disoriented.
Yes. 100%.
Like you just asked me to do a thing I don't know how to do.
Yeah.
Or you asked me to listen in a way that feels strange.
Yeah.
Like it makes me feel less in charge or you just asked me to like break down something that is uncomfortable. I've already dealt with that. I don't want to talk about it. And you're going to make me talk. Well, I don't want to do that. I've already put that in a neat box. Now it might be oozing nuclear waste out the side, but it's in a box. Like, why would you? And that is a way of participating.
Yes.
In disorientation.
Yes.
So for me,
that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Well, because you can choose.
Yeah.
You don't have to wait for things to go wrong. You can notice things.
Yeah.
For example, I'm always watching for pastors. How do you manage critical feedback?
Mm.
Is anyone allowed to tell you they don't like something you did?
Yeah.
In a way that you're like, I can hear that.
Yeah.
And the healthiest people I know in the world ask for it, seek it out.
Yeah.
And seek to apply it, not dismiss it.
Yes.
Okay. So when somebody comes to you, and I get it, you just finished preaching a sermon, and they're like, you know, I don't really think that 1 Timothy text works in relationship to this. And have you considered what Paul says in Galatians 2? And your immediate response is, this idiot thinks they know more than me. Okay, whatever. Even if you don't say a word.
Yeah.
Even if you smile. And you're immediately like building your case against, I would like to suggest that that's not a great posture for a pastor to be in.
Mm. Yes.
Okay. So the first thing you have to do is manage yourself.
Yes.
How do you do that? If right now when I'm saying this, you're like, how's that even possible? It is. You can grow.
Yes.
In a different kind of security where you can think whatever you want. And then you can be like, I'm sure there's something here that could be helpful to me.
Yes.
Maybe I didn't articulate that clearly enough.
Yeah.
Or you know what? Maybe they do have a point there. How do I stay in a posture of being curious when I feel under attack?
Yeah.
You can learn, you can condition your soul to trust God in a different kind of way that enables you to do that.
Yes.
And then imagine a third level, which is crazy to imagine. Imagine in that you care about this person.
Hmm.
You start asking yourself, I wonder what's going on with them.
Mm.
God, how would you want me to be helpful to this person?
Mm.
Those layers of development,
yeah,
you don't just get that somehow.
Yeah.
Like you don't like wake up one day and that's who I am.
Yeah.
I mean, for all of my Vineyard friends, you don't get zapped into that way of being. There's not like one prayer meeting that was the prayer meeting of all prayer meetings.
Yes.
That's not one good sermon. It's just not.
Mm-hmm.
That way of being connected to God, remaining curious about people, usually means you have to deform a couple ways you were built.
Yes. Yep.
You have to be reformed in the gospel of grace in a way that like, I can never be more loved than I am right now.
Yeah. Yes.
There's nothing that could ever happen that would make me less loved.
Yeah.
There's nothing I could do that would be good or bad.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do to be loved more. There's nothing I can do to be loved less.
Yeah.
And if I can live with that as a way of doing ministry, I pastor differently. I lead differently. I'm married differently.
Yes.
But that has to get formed in you by deforming some things, disorienting some things, learning some new skills that you train like muscles.
Yeah.
And then learning. And if you notice anyone that triggers you regularly, like my joke always is, there's always a type somebody doesn't like. And you can usually spot them in a room.
Yeah.
The thing you tend not to realize is you're someone else's type. And here's the deal. That person, that type,
yeah,
offers you the most potential growth of anyone.
Yes.
In your environment. Mm. They're probably bringing up an old memory of somebody else, uh-huh, a parent, an aunt, an uncle, an old coach, old boyfriend. Probably, not always, but often. It's not just temperament.
Yeah.
There's some kind of pain you're dragging around.
Yeah.
That God will keep bringing that in front of you.
Yes.
How do you manage feedback? How do you manage criticism? How do you manage that type of person?
Yeah.
Instead of continuing excusing that person away.
Yes.
How do you start to say, okay, Lord, how do I get in an environment with people who are skilled, that are going to walk with me? And I think some of the work you're doing does that.
Yes. Yeah.
But if you're really talented, if you're good at stuff, you don't have to do any of this crap. No, you really don't. People will just keep putting you on stages.
Yeah.
You'll keep saying cool stuff. People will write checks. You can hang out with the friends you like.
Yep.
Who laugh at the jokes you laugh at.
Yep.
Listen to the music you listen to.
Yep.
But somewhere, someday, something will happen.
Yes.
That will require you to get under that waterline. The kid gets sick. Your body shuts down.
Yeah.
The person you trusted betrays you. The economy crashes. COVID. I mean, talk about the great leveler.
Yes.
COVID.
Yep.
COVID taught us all that we are not discipling people as well as we thought we were.
Yeah.
Let alone ourselves.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you how grateful I am for your work. And we'll put in the show notes the website and the different stuff that directs. But I want to ask you one last question, then we get done. Okay. What would you want to say to the Vineyard? You've been hanging out with us. I would be tempted to tell the story of when we first met and talked about the Vineyard, where you were like, oh, the Vineyard still exists. But
sorry.
No, I loved it.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was really instructive because I thought, you know, maybe we haven't been. Our gift is for the whole church and for the lost and the marginalized. That's who we're meant to be. Mm-hmm. And as I have gone around the country, sometimes people are like, oh yeah, the Vineyard's still there, I guess. So from that day till now you're a Vineyard pastor. Tell me about, what would you want to say to the Vineyard? What have you learned? What would you want to even prophetically say?
Maybe I'll just share why I wanted to join the Vineyard.
Yeah.
My perception of the Vineyard now, because like you said, well, you might be surprised. It's funny to hear you say that, even that Pete may have made a comment about like how, wow, I couldn't see a non-white Southern California person becoming part of the Vineyard because as a Korean American growing up, the Vineyard was so formative for the experiences of God that I had as a kid in the 90s, 80s and 90s.
Yep.
And so there's a certain undeniable reality and truth that I had experienced and presence that I had experienced at Vineyard gatherings and through the music and a closeness to God that just, I mean, at the national conference, I wasn't even at the one where they did the history of music.
Oh, man.
But just through the screen, I'm watching live. And as those songs were sung, I was undone because it took me back to when I was a kid and when I first was experiencing the presence of God. And so already that was such a formative piece for me. And what I see in the Vineyard now, as I've gotten to know different people and seen the posture, I've seen a desire for a healthy integration of all of it, the contemplative, the charismatic, emotional health, care for the marginalized and the poor, an embrace of the multicultural expressions that exist globally. Mm-hmm. And I think that integration that's really centered, because all of it is the work of the Spirit, but the animating work of the Spirit that helps integrate all of that, and the Spirit being the foundational engine behind all of that, that is what I'm all in on. And so that's why I've been drawn. Well, when I discovered that the Vineyard exists now, but, and the people that I've met that have that similar disposition, yeah. I'm like, I want to keep hanging out with these people, and I want to be part of this movement. So that's where, yeah, I've been.
Well, can I be so brave as to prophesy to you?
Yeah.
I said this in your leaders meeting, and you know, okay. So you do things prophetically. Sometimes you're like, yeah, that may or may not have been God. I hope that was helpful. Mm-hmm. And there are certain things you're like, no, this is something God really, I think I'm saying what the Spirit's saying. I'm always asked, you're always asked as a pastor, what is your vision for the church? Do you have a 5-year vision? Do you have a 10-year vision? And you know, you have thoughts, you know, like, yeah, well, I mean, here's who we've been and here's who we are. Yeah. And here's who we can imagine we'll be. And I'm always nervous if a pastor's vision is super creative. It probably shouldn't be. The Bible gives you most of it. And then you have an expression of that and you're connected to the whole church, all that. So I'm always a little like, I don't love that question, but I get what you're trying to say. You're basically saying, are you a leader?
Yeah.
Do you have, okay. So that's the, but I've come to believe that part of what a leader has to say in that moment is there's people that are being brought to us that we know not yet. People that come to Christ that have different kinds of gifts and calling. Followers of Jesus who've moved to town for a job or to take care of their mom or whatever, that are going to find their way in our church.
Yeah.
And we are going to keep responding to what the Spirit does in people. Not just in the sort of man who descends from the mountain.
Yeah.
And so for me, Drew, I'm always watching, like, what is the Lord doing in this thing called the Vineyard? And more than that, outside the Vineyard, like, what is the Lord doing? Yeah. What's the Spirit doing that He's inviting the Vineyard to learn from or to participate with?
Yeah.
But especially within. And so for someone like you, for me, you are describing our heart, what we're trying to embody, but we become different because you're with us. Like you bring everything you just described and the other time we talked and I heard your story, you bring that in a way that we get to become more of who we're meant to be.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed at the amount of things, and you've been leading church a long time. I've been leading church my whole adult life that I never planned. Like we have this whole refugee ministry. I'm convinced of the Bible argument, but it's a couple who are from Laos and they notice these Burmese and they're like, Jay, we got to do something. I'm like, I trust you. So I'm empowering you as a leader. And next thing you know, this world appears.
Yeah.
Because the Spirit was doing that.
Yes.
That wasn't like on a whiteboard.
Yeah.
You know, what refugee community, you know, it could have been, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
We've been working towards emotional health. We're in. But you saying, you know, I'm in with the Vineyard grows us up together. Mm. So I'm just really grateful you're bringing your whole self to who we are. Drew, I anticipate and expect you to lead us in these ways. I mean you. I don't just mean like the thing you are a part of, because I trust what's in you. I was just with your church. I felt so at home. Oh. It's so warm. You know, there's so many places you go that the secret sauce is some flashy gadget. You know, like this one worship leader has the whatever. They got the building that did the thing. Or man, when this person preaches, blah, blah, or when this person prays. And you got plenty of flashy gadgets, but that's not what's happening. There's like a way you've cultivated a way of community, connecting to one another, connecting to God, connecting to the city that is so just beautiful. So I'm just really grateful for your leadership in the Vineyard in emotionally healthy discipleship.
Thanks, Jay.
And I'm I need more. I expect.
Well, the feeling is mutual. I love being around you, the vineyard, it's been such a joy.
Yeah. So I'm really, really grateful. So Better Together.
Yes.
You're our speaker through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Hopefully a bunch of people from your church come. Yeah, I was talking about that.
That'd be great.
But we'll have people from all over the country.
That's great.
If you are not coming to Better Together, you should. So you can come here, Drew, talk more about this. Different partnerships we're trying to build with Emotionally Healthy Discipleship. It's across the bridge from you.
Yes.
Right up there in Bergen County.
Very easy.
Which will be right after the World Cup final, I think.
No way. It's right after?
Right after.
That's amazing. Is the finals at MetLife, right?
It is.
In New York?
Right there.
South Korea, baby.
What do you think the odds are? You should look up Vegas right now.
Yeah.
Odds of South Korea winning the World Cup.
I'm rooting for South Korea versus U.S. I don't know if the brackets line up that way.
Low odds. Pretty low odds on that. Pretty low. South Korea probably has better odds than the U.S.
Maybe.
I don't know. They do.
Be interesting.
I bet they do. Anyway, okay.
Well, all right.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Jay.
Bye.
What if the communities you're building could only be as healthy as you are? Better Together is back, and this year we're going deeper. Join Vineyard USA Associations July 21st through 23rd at North Jersey Vineyard for a transformational gathering where beloved community meets emotionally healthy leadership. Featuring Drew Hyun from Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, you'll discover how to lead from wholeness instead of woundedness and build communities where people don't just attend, they truly belong. This isn't just another conference. It's a reset for your soul and a vision for the community God's called you to lead. Early bird pricing is available through May 4th. So don't wait. Learn more and register today at bettertogether.vineyardusa.org. We'll see you there.